Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of National Board Conversations. It is Read Across America Week, and on this episode I get to speak with a dear friend of mine, Diana Miner. She's an NBCT in Early Adolescence English Language Arts and is currently a Senior Manager of Standards here at the National Board. She resides in Birmingham, Alabama, and is proud of it. Diana has all the energy in the world, and you will feel it when we talk. We get into her journey to becoming an NBCT, how reading impacted her, and much more. Be sure to tune in till the end to get those Birmingham restaurant recommendations. I won't hold you any longer. Here's my conversation with Diana. Diana Miner, my good friend, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Eddie. How are you?
I'm doing well. I feel like we've been talking about having you on for a long, long time, so I'm glad we finally got to do it.
Excited to be here.
All right, so we're going to get right into it. Well, what's your current role, and can you give us a brief intro of yourself?
Yes, my current role is Senior Manager of Standards here at the National Board, and pretty much prior to coming here in 2022, I worked in a variety of capacities. I'm English language arts teacher, ESL teacher, reading interventionist, literacy coach, working in curriculum and instruction a little bit. So, and then I landed here at the National Board and excited to be here.
And I'm happy you're here. All right. So what are your three favorite foods?
Now that's hard, Eddie. That's a hard one because I kept thinking, I was like, what are my three favorite foods? And being here,
I tried to be able to give you three because it's hard to pick your favorite.
It's hard to pick your favorite.
You three, you could be like, all right, here's a couple of them.
Exactly. And in Birmingham, we've become like a little foodie of the South. So let me see. I would say seafood for sure. We get a lot of imports from the Gulf of Mexico, so down by the water. So seafood is one of my favorites. You can't come into Birmingham without barbecue, and they will kill me if they heard this podcast and me not mentioning barbecue. So Dreamland Barbecue is one of my favorites. And probably fruit. We have a lot of farming here, so fruit, melon, strawberry. So I would say fruits and then seafood and then barbecue would be third.
Okay. The last three songs on your Spotify playlist.
Oh, gosh, that's going to be hard. I'm going to be honest. I went to the Bob Marley movie about a week ago. And so I have been like into Bob Marley as if like you can put me on the island of Jamaica right now. So I have been listening to Bob Marley. Oh, my gosh. No Woman, No Cry. I love that one. And then I think this is the last song that he made, Redemption Song. I really like that one. So Bob Marley is on my Spotify right now. Let's see. Barbie World. Don't laugh, but I just love that song by Nicki Minaj from the Barbie movie. And then there's another song I've been hearing recently, and it was played at the Grammys. I think it's something on the lines of Explore the World. I think that's the name of the song. But it's like a slow, mellow song. So those are my favorites right now on my Spotify.
I love the variety. All right. The one sport team that has your heart. And if you're not a sports person, one movie you can recite line for line.
Now,
feel free to throw out both.
Okay, how can you be in Alabama and not be an Alabama sports fan? I know the Auburn people will like kill me for saying this, but Alabama Crimson Tide all the way ever since I was a kid. My cousin went to school there, and then I went to school there too. So Alabama football, definitely my favorite team. One movie you can recite line for line. Oh my gosh, The Color Purple. I mean, it will never die. I mean, The Color Purple.
The new one?
I haven't seen the new one. And everybody said, I mean, I kept thinking, why should I go out and see the new one? And they're like, it's good, Diana. You need to go out and see it because I'm so into the old one. But they said the new one is just as good. So I need to go see that.
Okay. We're going to get you to see it. So let's get back into your career. Can you share why you became a teacher and why you remain connected to education?
Oh, gosh, that's an easy one. Okay. My family, I come from a family of educators. My great, great grandparents, I think it was like 19, I've got 20. They donated land to build one of the Rosenwald schools. And at the time, because of segregation, African-Americans had to go to separate schools. And so they were, I guess you could say, entrepreneurs or big educators, or felt like we need to get our people educated. So they built or helped to build one of the Rosenwald schools back in Pickens County, Alabama, still standing to this day. And now it is a historical landmark. And my great aunt taught there, my mom's aunt, and cousins. There are so many educators in my family. It was just a natural fit. But came from a line of educators, and I had some good teachers along the way too. So it was just a natural thing. No one was surprised that I went into education.
Oh man, so really, it really is like a family.
It is. Yes, it's been great. Yeah, it's a big deal. Like now they made the school where my great-grandparents helped to build. It's like a museum now, and it's like 2 hours from Birmingham, but they have like community activities there. They have fitness things for the senior citizens. So it's still of use, and they did some renovation to it about 3 years ago. So yeah, education is sort of like in the DNA over here.
That's really, really cool. So what were you like as a student, and how did that influence your teaching style?
Oh gosh, now that is kind of funny. I hate to even admit this, but I was one of those students. I did not like sitting in the desk from the beginning of the class to the end of class. I like the teachers that sort of taught me hands-on, and I can just name them, like Miss Gloria Hunter. She was my Spanish teacher in high school, and we did things that I felt like would not only be memorable, but things that actually helped me learn. Like we did our entire Christmas program in Spanish, all Spanish songs, everyone who was in our class. So we learned all the songs, and then my history teacher in middle school, we did like hands-on field trips. So I was a type of student where I didn't like the lectures. If you lecture, I'm thinking it should be a short period of time. So sitting in the desk for a long period of time was very difficult for me. But and then when I became a teacher, I understood students who did not like to, you know, they like to transition. So my teaching style, I would say flexible. I like students learning in groups. I like them working in pairs. I think that's how they learn from each other and learn how to work together too. So my teaching style was more student-centered as opposed to teacher-centered. Teacher-centered would be the teacher doing the lectures and the talking. I was more like student-centered, where let the students do the work and you facilitate the learning. So that was more so me, because that's how I learned better.
Okay, so what did you enjoy most about being a teacher? Okay, or being in the classroom?
The students, and I still miss them, the students, and I'm still connected with a lot of them on social media now, but the students. I think that's the why behind every teacher, even though sometimes you may have a difficult parent here or there, but I think the students is at the heart of it all. And I think that they are the ones, the big why. We want them to learn. We want them to be productive people. So I would say students will be the biggest thing that I miss. And also my connection with colleagues that I used to work with too when I was a classroom teacher and working as a coach. So those are the things I sort of miss a lot.
So while you was in the classroom, you pursued National Board Certification. What was your journey like?
It wasn't an easy journey, I can tell you that for sure. I ended up, we had a grant here in Birmingham, part of Jefferson County. And at the time, they wanted more teachers to become National Board Certified. And so I ended up joining that cohort, got a CSP, candidate support provider, who helped us along the way. And then, what year was that? I gained certification in 2008. It was a cohort of us. And then I renewed in 2018. It seems like it's going to come around the corner soon. But I ended up having, when I started teaching, I had great model teachers around me. And I remember Dr. Tonya Perry. She's now in higher ed, but she was one of the first National Board Certified teachers in Alabama. Cheryl Thomas, she was another one of the first ones. And I saw how they were in the classroom, how the students resonated with them. They had very few or if any discipline problems. And I'm thinking, how do you teach like that? And so I wanted to be like them. And so they kept saying, you need to become National Board Certified. You'll like it. The journey will never leave you. And it's so true, because after going through the process, not only going through the portfolios and all of that, you do become more reflective in your thinking. Every decision that you make inside the classroom and outside of the classroom, I think, is one of the things that you learn after going through the National Board journey, and the connections that you make with other educators during the journey. And then it never ends. When I say it never ends, it's really true. Like every year they have a conference here, the Alabama NBCT conference. And I cannot tell you how many people that either see there that I've known for years, or who are MBCTs who actually do great things for other MBCTs. It's almost like they're passing the baton on to others. So it's just one of those things that I will highly recommend for any teacher thinking about it. And also would say it's been the most impactful thing for me as an educator.
That is awesome to hear. So it seems like it had a huge impact on your career. What avenues did it take you down?
Oh my gosh. After becoming National Board Certified, I ended up presenting at different conferences at the district level, state level, and then, oh my goodness, presenting at the NCTE conference, or it just connects you with so many other educators and also elevate you as in your career. If you want to continue in the classroom, that's an avenue, and there's so many things you could do that's impactful there. If you want to do other things in education that's not directly inside the classroom, like I think becoming a coach, a literacy coach, that was one of the things that I think because of my national board certification, and then at being asked to do things at the district level, like a district literacy initiative that I helped out with. I think having that board certification, people see that. They know it's like, I hate to say it, but it's a gold star. It really is. It's like the signature thing that every teacher should be proud of if you achieve it. But I think it just puts you in a different mode or a different track that you can accelerate and you can keep going as far as you want to go. So it's just one of those things I highly recommend, Eddie.
If I was in the classroom, I'd probably go for it too. So you're not in the classroom no more. You're working here at the National Board with me, thankfully. Yes. Why did you leave?
It's so funny. In my old district, everybody who knew that ended up getting a job at the National Board, I always said this when I teacher, then coach, and then doing other things in curriculum and ESL. I remember, or ELL, English Language Learners. I think that's the correct acronym now. But I remember the saying to someone, I would like, and it was just in passing, I would love to work for a National Board because I saw how the impact it made on me. But I didn't even think it was even a reality because I live in Birmingham. I don't live in the DC area. And so I remember someone said, Diana, they do have jobs that are remote. And I was like, really? And so I remember spring of 2022, I went online, saw that there were positions, and I was like, okay, let me just chance it. So I just sent in a resume and filled out the application, and everything snowballed from there. But I promise you, no one at my old jobs will tell me, why didn't you leave? They knew National Board would be the one that I would leave for. And I always said that I wanted to work for an education nonprofit. So it's almost like everything came together at one time when it was supposed to.
It was meant to be. It was meant to be.
Yeah, I think so too. Things happen for a reason, and I think that happened for a reason. But one thing I can say, I think the experience of being a National Board certified teacher, helping others, like when I got to the National Board, even though I work in the standards, on the standards team, I kept thinking, oh my gosh, I was a candidate support provider. I could work in a candidate experience. It sort of broadens you where you have so many, I don't want to say expertise because everybody's learning, but you do have a knowledge base in different areas of National Board certification. So, and I was excited to, and I'm happy to be where I am, but I was excited to see that I could actually collaborate with others here at the National Board too. So it's a great place to be.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool that we employ NBCTs here to work on the assessment and on the standards and all the stuff that we're doing here, because at the end of the day, it's for MBCTs and for students, right?
Yes. And I like the mission that we have. It's like all hands on deck. Like I've worked with you at different points since I've been at the National Board. I've worked on the other side with people in the candidate experience. I think we all collaborate so well together. And I think that's why the ship is sailing so well.
Yeah, we're definitely in a good place. All right. So you were an English language arts teacher, and it is Read Across America Week. Can you talk about the importance of reading and having a diverse set of authors for students to read from?
Yeah, I read a quote recently with something on the lines of literacy is the most basic currency of knowledge of the knowledge economy. Yeah, let me repeat that. I think it was something on the lines of literacy is the most basic currency of the knowledge economy. And I kept thinking, oh, what does that really mean? It basically means it's the essence of everything. If you can read, if a child can read and read successfully, that the sky is the limit. And I think that it ties into why it's important for kids to read and have a diverse set of authors. The importance of reading is that it can take them many places. In addition to that, I think if you can read, you can navigate all your classes and you can connect with different people. You can communicate well. You're able to write. But above all of that, I think having diverse set of authors, I remember diverse authors basically promotes diversity of thought, diversity of perspective. And there's a quote that says, when you're reading different authors or authors from different backgrounds, it's sort of like windows into the lives of others. And I remember a few years ago, I had a teacher and she said, you know, most of the kids, and at the time she had more minority kids than not. And she said that, oh, my African-American kids will love this novel. And I remember distinctly having a conversation with her. And I said, this novel is not only for the African-American kids in your classroom. It's also for the kids who are not African-American who can get a perspective of that African-American author. So it's like having a diverse set of thought, having different perspectives at the table, it will help others to see that window into the lives of others. And you create an understanding better of another culture, of another language, or people from another place. So that's the importance of having Read Across America and also having a diverse set of authors for students so they can learn from people who are not like themselves. And that creates that bonding and that sense of building community across the aisle or for those who are not similar to you. And reading, as I said before, I can go on and on about it. The connections that you make, yeah, the connections with the text, the building understanding, all of that ties into literacy and diversity of perspective.
So did you typically celebrate Read Across America Day in your classroom? Did you have any memorable experiences that you would like to share?
Yes, I always had read-alouds during the Read Across America week. That was one of the things that I did. And one thing about it, the kids that I work with were secondary, but and then, like, I would go if I went to an elementary school to do a read aloud if invited by an elementary teacher. But one thing that I really, really like doing is reading aloud to older kids. And the older kids loved it. And I did so. And I think another teacher told me, they said, Diana, the older kids like read alouds too, the big picture books. I'm like, really? And when I started doing that in my classroom and saw that the big football players or the kids who, you know, you wouldn't think would be interested in a children's book, they were interested. I think that's one of the things that I did that I remember that resonated with my students. But another thing that I really like is coordinating. We had a Rockin' Readathon, and that's where we invited local people from the community, the mayor, Miss Alabama, or prominent football players from Alabama or Auburn. They would come in to read to the kids too. And it was an all day thing that we had. I coordinated and worked with the Parent Teachers Association or the PTO organization at our school. And they helped pull that off because that was a big undertaking. But that was another thing that we did as a school-wide initiative that I helped with. And also working with the media specialist, she and I would get together and have a big, I guess you could say, I don't want to say readathon, but we had more like a challenge, a school-wide challenge. Yeah. We had kids to read so many books over a certain period of time during the month of March. And then we stretched that out through the end of the year. So literacy has always been a big passion of mine, Eddie.
That's really awesome. Like, it's really cool. It sounds like there was a lot of work to take care of all of that stuff. Did you see any students have lasting effects towards reading and have positive impact on what they kept reading moving forward?
Yeah. Say, for instance, if you choose a book, any book that most of the kids will always point out the read alouds. But I just love reading like segments from books that were not read alouds, but just reading aloud to kids in general. One of my favorites, I have so many. Oh, my goodness. Walter Dean Meyer's Scorpions was one of the books that resonated with a lot of the kids, even though I did it in small group. But I also used to do it as a read aloud, too, during the time when I didn't have it as a small group novel choice. And so I would read aloud segments of the book and the kids would come back and say, oh, I didn't know that happened in New York. Oh, I would like to go to New York one day. Or tell me more about Walter Dean Myers, the author. And they would want to read more of his books. And I tried to choose books that were not common or books that some teachers would shy away from or not select. Another great book, I would say The Book Thief is another great read aloud that you can do with kids, and it's about the Holocaust. I tried to choose books that were that students could actually pull a huge lesson from, something that they would want to read more about or explore more about on their own. And I always would tell them, authors will give you a little bit, but if in order to find out a lot, you need to go beyond some of the things they talked about. So go to the internet, see what you can find, go research it, look for other things outside of the novel or the book.
No, you're not lying. So recently, I finished the book, The Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde. Mm-hmm. And there's interwoven tidbits about the dictatorship that was in the Dominican Republic. And I had, like, it just was something I've had vague memories of, not even memories, but vague information on in my head about the Dominican dictatorship. But, like, the details that it went into made me go on the internet and learn more about what was going on down there during that time. And it was crazy. It was very fascinating.
Yeah. And another thing I forgot to mention, when you're doing literacy or talking about literacy, or I tell teachers when I coach them, I said, make sure that, yes, you're having these great books in the classroom, but make sure that students are writing about what they read. And that's how they make connections and build understanding. If they can write about it, they understood it. So yes, that like reading and writing, yeah, that reading and writing connection is so important.
That's awesome. So there's a lot of technology that can help with reading. Are there any tools or platforms that can help enhance the reading experience for students?
Oh, goodness. Probably. I'm a big fan of audiobooks, but I also tell teachers and parents and students that their eyes must be on the text as well until they become a proficient reader. I think audiobooks is a great tool that students can use. And now we also have for students to help them write about what they read, the Read, Write, Think, I think it's called, or Read and Write is another tool that teachers are using in the classroom to help students with not only just grammar, but to help them construct sentences and things like that. Oh, goodness, Eddie, that's a good question. I would say one-to-one technology. In my old district, we had every student had a Chromebook or a iPad in the earlier grades. And I think those things can help, too, making sure that students are able to listen to what they read. Or instead of writing, maybe they can type it, and that's okay. Some teachers would disagree with that, but that's okay if they can type it, too. But just having access to technology and being able to look up things that they're curious about. But also, there are so many apps now that help with literacy as well. Apps with helping to decode words and things like that. So there are so many things out there that teachers can use to help them be successful.
All right, Diana, we're going to take a real left turn here.
Okay.
Who is your favorite fictional teacher?
Oh, goodness. I can tell you that right now. Okay, if you have not seen this movie, everybody out there, you got to go and watch. It's an old movie because I remember it's a long time ago. Dangerous Minds by Michelle Pfeiffer. And there was a line that she said in the movie that I'll never forget. She's teaching, I think, inner city, Los Angeles, California, the movie Dangerous Minds. It came out. And at the time, I had just started teaching, I think, or maybe I saw that in college. I can't remember. But I remember everybody's talking about this movie. And so I went to see the movie, and it resonated with me. And one line that sticks out to me to this day is she told the kids, because they felt like they were in a, I guess you could say, challenging circumstances because of where they were born, not having access to resources, poverty, all of those things that can present a challenge. And she told them, there are no victims in this classroom. And when she said that, they all sort of looked at her, they got quiet, and she just basically said, there are no victims here. You are not your circumstances. And so once she got those kids to buy into that and believe that, the changes that she made over the course of the year with them. So if you have not seen Dangerous Minds with Michelle Pfeiffer, you got to see that movie.
That's a powerful quote. It's a powerful quote.
Yeah.
What are three restaurants folks should try when visiting you in Birmingham?
Okay. I'm trying to get the National Board to come here next year for our conference. I've already put the pitch out to the right people. I've told the National Board, her name is Dr. Janie Singletary. She knows to reach out to the right people here. But because I want National Board to come here and indulge in our food. But I would say three restaurants here. Oh, goodness. Seafood would be Automatic Seafood from, that's downtown Birmingham. And they get their seafood straight from the Gulf of Mexico. Delicious. Fantastic. My next one I would say would probably be, I like East West. I went there last weekend for my birthday. It's an Asian infusion type of restaurant. Beautiful ambiance. Great Asian cuisines. So East West, definitely Automatic Seafood, the first one that I mentioned, and probably Dreamland. You can't come to Birmingham without barbecue, but I would not only say Dreamland. There's Saw's Barbecue. There's Jim and Nick's. Other people here would like kill me for not saying some of the others, but my favorite is Dreamland.
All right. So we're going to get into some teacher recruitment here.
Okay.
You got 1 to 2 minutes to give an elevator pitch for someone trying to get into the teaching profession. What are you going to tell them?
Oh, goodness. We need more teachers. We need good people. We need teachers in the teaching profession because we need students to, every child, first of all, deserves a great teacher, not by chance, but by design. And so we need those who have a passion for learning, who are willing to collaborate together. And also, I would just say we need good teachers because we need good leaders. Everybody was taught by a great teacher, regardless of whether they are CEO of a company, president of the United States, senator, Congress. I don't know. I guess you could say movie star. Everybody had a great teacher. So we need more great people in the classroom. If you're considering it, definitely give it a shot. I think it's worth it. And definitely consider National Board certification along your way.
Yeah, along those lines, you know, we have the feature on the podcast called The Shoulder Tap.
Yeah.
Give a tap on the shoulder to a colleague and let them know they're ready to become National Board Certified. On here, give them a quick shout out, and we'll encourage them on social media to go through the process. So, Diana, who are you shoulder tapping today?
I am going to give my shoulder tap to Reed Lockamy. He is a Hoover High School teacher here in Birmingham. He teaches at Hoover High. He's an English teacher. Phenomenal English teacher in the International Baccalaureate program, the IB program here. Phenomenal. He really is a National Board Certified teacher. He just needs to go through the process and get the certification. He's phenomenal. So he's the one I would shoulder tap today.
All right, Reed. It's you up.
Okay, Reed, we're ready.
All right, Diana, thank you for joining me on the podcast. This was fun.
I know. Thank you, Eddie, for having me.
Diana always brings the energy to the conversation. I love chatting with her, and I got to make sure I get down to Birmingham to visit her someday. Anyway, I want to thank her for taking the time to chat with me on the podcast, and thank you for listening to this episode of National Board Conversations. Be sure to like, share, and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to them, and we'll see you next time.